fantasy freaks and geeks.
What's up? We welcome you in to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here with you, joined alongside by this cast of idiots.
Accurate.
Fair. We've got the wide receiver prognosticator. We have West Virginia's finest. We got Matt Harmon. What's going on, man?
Hello, James.
How goes it today?
Good morning. It's fun. This is interesting. We've got a new, different producer behind the glass. We're just engaged in a enthralling conversation. I have to say, there's a lot of people at NFL Media that I would consider trolls.
Yes.
And I would like to think that I occasionally dip my toes in the water of being a small bit of a troll myself. But I think one of the best is Erica behind the glass here. Real professional.
Professional troll?
I don't think that's the word I would use, you know, myself, but I'll take it.
I mean, it's said with the utmost complimentary tone.
Yeah, I mean, you're just really easy to make fun of.
I know. The walking joke of my own life.
The whiz kid from Wisconsin. Fresh off of a pair of television appearances with Alex Gilhart.
Now I'm relegated back to this show.
All right.
Soon to be the clock.
Relegated?
Yes. It's like in the Premier League. I didn't win enough games.
Very sad.
We've got Matt Franchise here as well. What's going on, man?
Yep. Watched the World Series again last night, dude. I'm exhausted. So.
Oh, my God.
It was an emotional.
What?
We're on the West Coast. It was like perfect time to watch it.
It was just.
Everybody.
It was
like,
5 hours
so
long.
Tired.
Oh, dude, it was probably like 2 a.m. when that ended on the East Coast.
Don't care.
They weren't even watching it on the East Coast. They don't care. It's the
they were sleeping.
Astros. Who cares? They don't care.
But it was a good game.
We got producer Erica in the building as well. What's going on?
Not much. How are you guys?
We're good, man. We're just trying to get through Monday.
Yep.
Could be worse.
What a rousing start to the bye. Okay, we got a great show in front of us here today. We're going to be really breaking down the Saints offense. We will be giving you the waiver wire. Alex Gilhart writes a terrific piece every single week, and man, he has some waiver wire guys for you all ready to rock and roll. We will talk about top performers. We'll talk about your biggest disappointments, and we will get to every damn game as well. But we start your show, as we always do, with your top fantasy headline.
News.
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 News. The whistles go woo. All right, let's start with Deshaun Watson. Man, he is an absolute just stud. 402 passing yards, 4 touchdowns. He did have those 3 picks. One of them came in desperation. But Doesn't matter. I mean, really, he just was. It was such a baller performance, man. 67 rush yards as well.
In Seattle.
In Seattle. So I want to get the reaction here regarding Deshaun Watson. And it's funny because I feel like we talk about Deshaun a lot with each and every, incredible performance that he puts on. But, I mean, in Seattle. Taking on the Legion of Boom. I mean, challenging Richard Sherman, challenging Earl Thomas. Did he win those battles all the time? No. But, man, he comes out and just is firing. He is absolutely fearless. Can we talk about his performance? And then, of course, we'll get to the Houston Texans offense in general. But, Alex Gilhart, your takeaways from that game?
I mean, to steal Harmon / Sigmund Bloom's turn, this was kind of like an inflection point game for Watson because...
Inflection point drink.
We had seen his ceiling against a bunch of bad pass defenses in a row. And coming out of the bye, there was some concern like, all right, he's a rookie. He's had some passes that could be intercepted. Can he still access his outrageously high fantasy ceiling against good defenses? And he proved he could. I mean, at this point, I think...
In a bad spot.
At this point, you cannot sit him.
I don't think you can.
He's too electric right now, and his ceiling is too high. Like, you just have to play him every week.
Matt Harmon, I know you were a little bit more cautious, I think, with Deshaun Watson.
Yesterday.
So, I know we had been, every time you go on Twitter, it's like, people hit you up with Twitter questions. Like, should I play Alex Smith or Deshaun Watson? Should I play this guy or Deshaun Watson? Should I play this guy or Deshaun Watson? And it seems like there's a lot of Deshaun Watson questions out there. And I think you were a little bit more cautious about his upside.
100%, because even though what he had done to this point was really awesome, I still thought that, this is a rookie quarterback going into Seattle. But I think I misjudged the situation in two ways. One, this is not a normal rookie quarterback. This is something different that we're not used to seeing. I mean, I tweeted yesterday that I wish Deshaun Watson was my quarterback.
Right.
I'm annoyed that he's not. I also was saying to people privately, I wish there was 32 Russell Wilson's, Deshaun Watson's and Dak Prescott's. I didn't want to tweet this because I didn't want people coming at me like, "Where am I, Carson Wentz or whatever?" Like, yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, but I want those guys to be spread throughout the league. Everybody should have one of them because they're just so much fun to watch. But this is not a normal rookie quarterback. And the second way that I misjudged this, I think, it's not this. It's not like the same Seahawks defense of old. You know,
true.
They can get beaten in a number of different ways.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Really, it's just not a team that, like, with a player playing with the momentum that he has right now, that we should be afraid that they're just going to completely stop it.
I think also missing Cliff Avril probably had a big impact on that defensive line and just getting after a guy like Deshaun Watson. But let's talk about the wide receivers, Matt. Franciscovich, I mean, again, we were just marveling at the fact that he was just firing balls to Nuke, but especially Will Fuller as well.
Yeah.
I mean, just keeps catching touchdowns.
Every catch is a touchdown with Will Fuller. And Watson's performance produced
it's crazy.
Two of the top three fantasy wide receivers of the week
Isn't
in Hopkins
crazy?
And Fuller. It was incredible.
Incredible.
And a lot of I'm seeing a lot of tweets now. People who are like, "Oh, I drafted D-Hop in the third round, and I picked Watson up on waiver wires. Then I'm 7-1 in my league." Like, his Watson is producing an offense that's single-handedly winning people their seasons in fantasy.
Isn't that insane? It's great to see, man. It's absolutely great to see. And you guys have used that, you know, phrase, you know, a what is it, a rising tide?
Yeah, he's rising all the tides in this offense.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see, man.
And Lamar Miller had two touchdowns too.
Right.
Well, so there you go. I mean, there's another guy. And it's funny, too, because last year we're talking about a lot of the same, you know, characters there in Houston.
Yeah.
And none of them could get anything going.
I know.
Like
it was quarterback terrible.
Is the most important position on the field.
I think I said at one point yesterday to Harmon, right. It's hard to remember, like, imagine what the Texans' offense was at this point last season.
It was difficult to watch. They were rocking out, man.
And now it's one of the most fun teams in the league to watch.
By the way, James, you kind of busted my chops on the show, too, when I was like, Lamar Miller's been, like, cooking a little bit.
I know. He's cooking. I was like,
has he? He's had a handful of touchdowns, and even in the games he didn't, he was averaging, like, 90-ish total yards, which if you're going to get nine and a half points on, like, an off day from a running back, I'll take that.
That's good.
Every
Without a touchdown, yeah.
You know what I realized? It's the fact that he's been doing well, but, I mean, it's just the fact that in this particular offense, he's an afterthought. Even though in fantasy he's doing well, but just when you're watching these games, I'm like, Lamar Miller's on this team somewhere?
Right.
He's just getting lost in the shuffle, you know
what
I mean?
Even the defense, like, oh, hell, that's right, they've got a running back all of a sudden when he shoots through for like 10, 12 yards.
Right, exactly.
Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus tweeted this morning, just to show the difference between the two quarterbacks, Deshaun Watson has more deep passing yards in the last four games, 406, than Brock Osweiler had all of last season, with 379.
Wow.
Those comparisons are just going to go on all year, and they're just going to be insane.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's deserved. Should we talk about Will Fuller, too?
Can we?
Because that's an interesting...
Dude, his efficiency dropped way, way down. I'm really disappointed in him.
So here's the thing with Will Fuller now at this point. I mean, he has, what, seven touchdowns on
13 catches?
Which is outrageous. And every fantasy analyst is, you know, strolling down the time like, well, he's going to regress eventually. And, you know, that is accurate. He's not going to catch 30 touchdowns on 50-some targets or whatever the rate would be. That's not revelatory analysis. The deal with Will Fuller now is, like, basically you can never not play this guy because you could be sitting – and, again, this was a solid matchup. Going forward, I mean, they've got a pretty juicy schedule. I mean, they play the Colts next week. He might drop a 2 for 25 performance in your lineup one day, but I feel like you just
have
to – I don't
think he ever will.
It's worth –
I think it's at some point that's going to happen. Just because of the volume that he's getting, at some point he's going to regress. It's just inevitable, again, unless you expect him to score 30 touchdowns this year, James, which I don't think I do. It's just a situation where you can't leave that on your bench. You can plan around that potential volatility with other players in your lineup, pick more secure guys. But to me, you have to make sure you find a way to expose yourself to that weekly ceiling every game.
He's got, like, the weekly ceiling of D-Jack circa, like, 2010, but with a better quarterback, and he's hitting way more often right now.
You know, I think Mike Clay, and obviously we respect the crap out of Mike Clay, but, you know, drew a comparison between Will Fuller and what Marvin Jones did. As well, in terms of, okay, you've seen the ceiling.
His 10 touchdown.
Yeah, you've seen the ceiling. You know, this is a guy that can, you know, obviously produce touchdowns when given the opportunity, but there will be times when he absolutely craters. I get the comparison, but it's different because he's got a different quarterback. Yeah. That's just my thought.
That's fair. But, again, looking at the schedule just for the rest of the year, they get the Colts next week, then the Rams, the Cardinals, the Ravens, the Titans, the 49ers. The only spot that this whole offense runs into where I might be like, ooh, what do? Is in Jacksonville on December 17th. I believe that is week 15.
Oh, my
then
God.
Then they get the Steelers and Colts to close out the year.
That's just going to be an epic matchup, man. I can't wait to see it.
Strength, yeah.
I mean, from just a real-life fantasy
and
perspective.
Also,
I'll be stressing from
that,
fantasy.
Yeah. That game could have playoff implications, as crazy as to think about it.
Yeah,
a December game in Jacksonville for the division lead, maybe?
Better
rent us an inland beach house.
Let's go.
That game.
Well, a couple miles from the beach.
Yeah.
We should move on.
Let's talk about New England a little bit here. Again, it's a defense. I'll throw this question out to you guys, all right? Has the New England defense found something? Because the first 6 weeks of the season, just trash. I mean, we're talking about a defense that was just getting shredded.
I'd like to go first.
Go ahead.
I don't believe it right now.
Okay.
They've had, if you look at the last couple games that have helped swing their, like, yardage and points against totals and stuff, you go to the Jets game, they had that messed up ASJ touchdown called back, took points off the board, and also, like, took plays for the Jets off the table.
Sure.
Like, even if, like, because it was a touchback. It was the dumbest rule in football.
Yeah. It's
so then New England took over and just did their clock controlling thing. The Falcons game, get Sark out of here, plus the fog. Like,
it's true. The
wipe that game off the thing.
Fair enough.
Then this game, Travis Benjamin returns a punt negative 11 yards for a safety.
Yeah.
Like, that takes a whole – that gives the Patriots points, puts the ball back in their hands, takes a whole possession out of
Phillip
the Chargers'
Rivers,
hands.
Yeah.
And that what happened then is that was a case where I was listening to the ATN pod on the way to work this morning.
Yeah.
The Patriots ran, like, 55 plays to 14 or 19 for the Chargers in the first half because of, like, a dumb fluky thing like that. What they're having to do is they're having to go like Cowboys last year and do super, 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 super clock control to cover their defense. Their defense has not been fixed, in my eyes, by any stretch of the imagination.
But isn't it, from a fantasy perspective, does it matter?
I was going to say that it might not matter because this is the next, again, to come back to schedule, they play in Denver next week. Like, that's an offense that's trying to find itself.
Okay.
The Raiders offense is overrated.
Okay.
The Dolphins are a bad offense. They're in Buffalo. That should be a good one.
Yeah.
Tyrod has
that, for that game.
Has that offense cooking.
Yeah.
Then they play the Dolphins again. And then the Steelers and Bills. So, I mean, it might not matter because the only team I think that's even above average offense on that slate right now is the Raiders barely and the Bills.
But, like, it's a case where
and the Steelers.
With the Broncos pass catchers, it wouldn't be a situation where all of a sudden we should fear starting Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders in that spot.
Right.
I mean, even these bad offenses, they have fantasy assets that people will be concerned about, certainly. And up until this point, New England was a defense where you were licking your chops. You were like, oh my goodness, yes, please, let me have assets in this New England defense or against this New England defense, right? But I guess what I'm saying is, should we shift our paradigm here and view this defense as actually not that kind of defense moving forward, just given the fact that 2 weeks in a row now, they've had pretty good performances. And however they're doing it, whether they're doing it through clock control or whatever it might be, they're limiting the opportunity.
Some dumb luck, some safety punt returns.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the overall question I have. I don't know if it's true. I don't think that they've improved from a real-life standpoint, but from a fantasy perspective, I'm just wondering, can the offense do enough to limit, I guess, in terms of clock control, limit the other offense, if that makes any sense?
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe these games with New England are just not like everybody in the pool sort of games.
That's right.
You get your guys in there, but probably you're not going down to like, well, do I start like a Benny Fowler against them next week or something like that?
I mean, because again, 3 weeks ago, everyone was like, oh my God, you got to pick on these New England Patriots defenders. But, you know, I don't know if that's the case moving forward. But I'll be interested to see, to your point, Alex Gilhar, if it was just more fluky performances, maybe the whole Sark effect, which was really bad for Atlanta, versus
it
just real.
Really bad still. Is really bad.
Remains poor.
Remains below average, yes. All right, let's talk about New Orleans. And I'm excited about this topic because I'm curious as to see what you guys think about New Orleans, the Saints offense, from a fundamental standpoint. Right now, they're running 43% of their plays as run plays. That's a very run-heavy approach, given, A, the Saints, and just be the NFL in general. 57% of their plays are passes. In 2016, just for comparison, again, 43% this year are runs. Last year, it was 36% that were runs. And the eyeball test also kind of, I think, confirms this Matt franchise. But what are your thoughts on the Saints? And the reason I bring it up is because from a fantasy perspective, boy, we get really excited about the volume for Michael Thomas, the volume for a guy like even ancillary pieces like a Willie Snead, the upside for a Willie Snead, Drew Brees as a fantasy quarterback.
Right.
Maybe the volume isn't there now.
I think one of the biggest things is the improvements on the defense have made them not have to be so aggressive on the other side of the ball, because they were just one of the worst offenses in the league for the last 2 years. Like,
worst
and defenses. Historically bad, right?
Historically bad defense.
Yes, correct. So they were always trying to play catch up with the teams that they were facing, and Drew Brees was throwing the ball 45 times a game, and he was, you know, 600 times a year, and that created volume for the rest of the pass catchers. Even though he would spread it around, you know, you'd still have your big games out of your wide receivers. And Michael Thomas hasn't been that guy this year, and they're giving the ball to Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram more, like you said, like they're more run heavy, and these guys are getting it done. So
I'm going to double down on your run play percentage stat here. Over the last 3 weeks, they've been a 49% a passing play percentage team. That's fifth from the bottom.
Wow.
In that time span. The only teams that have a lower pass play percentage than them during the last 3 weeks, Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, Dallas,
wow.
And Chicago.
That's amazing.
That's unbelievable for a New Orleans team, like you mentioned. And I think it has been a fundamental shift, because their offensive line all year has been really good. We talked about that Next Gen Stats run blocking stat last week. They've been top five in that category pretty much throughout the entire season. Removing Adrian Peterson has given the run game more rhythm.
Yeah.
And not to mention, I mean, they're winning games. You don't run to win in the NFL. You win to run, and that's what the Saints are doing right now. And their defense is better, as franchise said. So I think this is a fundamental shift, and we have to adjust expectations accordingly. Not only does Michael Thomas, maybe we have not seen like a real true ceiling game from him. I think it will take a
shot. Or maybe we have.
Well, I mean, if like what you would have expected.
Yeah.
You've not seen that sort of spike week. And it might take like a true shootout for that to happen. But that's not really just not what the Saints are doing this year.
Drew Brees is on pace, hashtag on pace,
yeah,
for 566 pass attempts. That would be his lowest total in a season where he played all 16 games, because there were a couple where he rested, since like 2007.
Yeah,
wow.
It's crazy. Yeah.
They're just different. More balanced overall, and you can start both of these running backs every week now.
Their quarterbacks are pushing 40, and this is what a lot of teams want to do.
It's
and,
also
I mean,
fair, yeah.
It made sense when they – I mean, like, the signing of Adrian Peterson didn't make sense, but it was clear an indication that, like, we want to run the ball more and protect Drew Brees. Then by getting Adrian Peterson out, they were able to accomplish that even better. But, yeah, I mean, it's just – this is a case where we just can't – you also can't go to those other wide receivers. It's like Michael Thomas, maybe Ted Ginn, or get out in the passing game.
What do you do with Michael Thomas? I think he's still got a lot of name value out there. I think a lot of folks are thinking, you know, anticipating maybe some kind of second-half turnaround. I don't know. When I kind of – look at what the Saints are getting done offensively right now, and you look at that run and pass percentages, I guess I'm just not that hopeful that Michael Thomas will see a big turnaround.
The problem is, like, he's so safe, and he hasn't really been disappointing. I mean, he has had eight or more targets in every single game this year. The only time he hasn't was that weird game against the Lions where
yeah,
they
– his 11-3-catch, yeah, 11-yard
– right, where they
the
were,
defense scored a bunch.
Exactly, where the offense barely possessed the ball because yeah, the defense was scoring and et cetera, et cetera. It was like, yeah, you're right, he's not a big ceiling player, but he's just such a safe, secure asset that it's yeah, like what – you know, what do you
I mean?
His last
six games have been 89, 87 in a touch, 89 in a touch, 82, 77.
Okay.
Like, that's very, very consistent. And if he can get into the end zone as the number one wide receiver, like, you're in good shape. Yeah. I'm not panicking on him. I'm not trying to ship him off or anything like that. That's much more consistent wide receiver play than we're getting from a lot of guys across the league, especially in a standard format.
Very good point. I've seen a lot of trade offers, too, because I have Alvin Kamara in a lot of different spots. Seeing a lot of trade offers come in for Alvin Kamara. If you were going to sell Alvin Kamara, are you treating him as an RB2, as an RB, you know, a low-end, low, you know, maybe top 15 running back moving forward in PPR? How are you valuing Alvin Kamara, and is this an asset that you would even consider giving up?
Nah, I don't know.
I'm not trading him away.
He's like a high-end flex, low-end RB2 for me because Mark Ingram is the workhorse there. And Kamara's great, and he's getting enough work to be a weekly starter. But
man, like, those two fumbles, though, I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
But they're also, like, the snap count has been close to 50-50 the last couple weeks since Adrian Peterson's been gone. But Mark Ingram has still been the bell cow. He's still getting a ton of volume. And Kamara's produced, like, you know, high-end flex numbers.
I mean, he's the running back 17 in PPR right now. The last 3 weeks in standard leagues, he has 8.7, 10.7, 13.6 points.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's fine. That's so you're not
high, high-end flex, low-end RB2. I'm just not – I don't want to get crazy about it yet.
Right. I don't know, man. I feel very optimistic about Alvin Kamara. I mean, especially, again, because, you know, I hate to highlight the Mark Ingram two fumbles, but –
Do you hate it, though?
Probably not.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Yeah, wait a minute. Of course. No wonder James pounding this so hard. He had to find an opportunity to pile on Mark Ingram. Wow. Your true colors are showing again.
Dang it, Cole.
The hatred for Mark Ingram can just never go away.
Can't believe, 4 years now I've been
dealing
with
this. Can't believe you guys got in. We were all trapped.
On James's deathbed, he's going to be like, Mark Ingram sucks.
What the unbelievable.
His daughter's going to be like, Dad, what are your last words? Mark Ingram. She's like, that's it? That's all you have for me?
Unbelievable.
That's ridiculous.
I'll just go on record and say I think Alvin Kamara could be the best back by the end of the year in the Saints backfield.
Least
really?
Least shocking prediction ever.
Wow. Dude, no way.
He's entrapping you, franchise.
Oh, my gosh.
Get out of here, James.
Ian Rappaport says Sam Bradford not close to returning, and quote, the expectation now is Teddy Bridgewater is healthy enough to return to the team and on the field after the bye week. He continues by saying, if that happens, expect him, we're talking about Teddy Bridgewater, to be activated off the PUP list and then compete for the starting job.
I mean.
All right.
I don't know how much there is to say there, but
Teddy
Bridgewater comes back, I don't know how to feel about guys like Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. We haven't seen Teddy Bridgewater play in over a year.
Not only that, but also Teddy Bridgewater, remember when he was playing, he did not go deep very often.
Right.
You know what I mean? He was not known as a very good downfield thrower, even going back to his college days. So
The thing is, he was right before he got injured. That offense was shifting. It was hitting its next stride. There were articles like Stephon Diggs, we're using him deep more. We were seeing flashes of it in the preseason. Like, that offense looked like it was ready to go. Teddy was showing touch. He had great deep passes, and then
busted
he went
knee.
Down. I think he's a much better quarterback than Case Keenum. Case Keenum's been he's been a great backup.
Yeah.
I think if Teddy comes back and is healthy enough to play and looks close to the Teddy that we saw right before his injury, this is good news for Diggs and Thielen.
Well, it sounds like they want him to be that guy. I mean, Rapshee said that they still view him as their franchise quarterback. Zimmer said after the game, I hope I have a decision to make. Case has done an unbelievable job. We'll figure it out as we go.
Okay. There you go.
But yeah, I mean, like Case Keenum has been fine, but his last six games, two touchdowns, one pick, zero touchdowns, one pick, 1-1, one touchdown, no picks, zero touchdowns, zero picks. Like, he's been meh.
He's been the Jarek McKinnon show, really.
He's keeping the offense afloat.
But I mean, he hasn't been like unlocking the potential that we saw with this passing offense in Sam Bradford's game in week one
or that fluky game,
the Tampa Bay game. But everybody's getting over on Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
so.
Indeed. Except Carolina for some reason.
I know the reason.
Chicago tight end Zach Miller.
It's because Mark Ingram fumbled, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What?
Exactly what I was thinking.
Chicago tight end Zach Miller suffered a gruesome-looking injury, dislocated knee. I guess it tore an artery in there. They are working to save the leg, which is a total bummer. But
yeah.
Just wanted to get that news out there. And obviously, we wish Zach Miller the absolute best. How was that not a touchdown? Come on.
Well, because it was America's favorite game show. What is a catch?
It's terrible.
It's my least favorite game
show. So stupid.
No, it's the worst.
For the record.
I'm being completely facetious every time I say that.
All right, let's hit the waiver wire, shall we? NFL.com/waiver wire. It's the Alex Gellhart piece. Give me, run through a few names here.
No surprise, Alex Collins tops the waiver wire. We've talked about him a bunch because he has looked far and away the better runner in that backfield, but he was playing like 18% of the snaps.
Yeah.
He would come in for like 15 plays, carry the ball on 11 of those plays, and then get yanked for Javorius Allen for like the rest of the game. But they were
they can't do that moving forward.
No,
right? There's no way.
No. He was averaging like 6 yards a carry or something crazy coming into this game, and then he delivered a masterful performance again. Buck Allen fumbled at the goal line. Like, this has to be Alex Collins' backfield going forward.
It has
and
to be.
And he's been like picked up and dropped a ton because people are like, this is going to be his week. He's going to take over, much akin to the Joe Mixon weeks.
Right.
Never happened. Now he should be taking over. You got to go out and add him. He might be the last like game changing waiver wire ad we get this year because we're reaching the point where there aren't going to be more of those guys emerging.
Yeah.
Like, nor are they going to have time for them to be game changing ads. So like, if you have a high priority on the waiver wire or a bunch of fob to burn,
Go get him.
Spend it.
All right.
Jamal Charles hasn't played yet as of the taping, but
that's right.
There was rumors that he could get more carries, and I think he's a sneaky ad this week.
Okay.
Even if he doesn't get a bunch of carries this week in his revenge game, like. That backfield needs a spark, and they've got a potential Hall of Famer there who has yet to see double-digit touches in a game. Like, give him the ball, man. A couple other guys, Sterling Shepard. Don't forget to look for him on the waiver wire.
I love that.
Because he was about
to... dropped a lot.
He was about to come back before the bye.
Yeah.
Had a minor setback. Now he's fully healed up. He says he's good to go. And we were talking about this in the Stronghold yesterday. Like, if he doesn't come back and see, like, 10, 12 targets a game, it's an upset. Because, Jay, here's a stat for you. In the two games since the Rapture hit the Giants receiving core in week five. So across two weeks, 120 minutes of football, the Giants wide receivers have combined 7 catches for 67 yards.
Holy God.
2 NFL games, 3 wide receivers have combined for 7 catches for 67 yards.
Well, because Evan Ingram.
It's guys.
Well, it's Roger Lewis. It's
Harris. They're not doing anything. Evan Ingram's getting all the volume.
It's guys that were like called up from the practice squad and stuff. But
right.
Out of necessity, but Sterling Shepard's going to come into a huge workload.
Right.
I'm only a minor biblical expert, but... I do actually have a minor in religious studies.
Do you?
I do. Yeah.
Oh my goodness!
Save it for the religion pod. But anyways, I think the rapture is supposed to be a positive experience, and I don't know if losing your top 4 receivers in one game counts as
well. It was they.
I don't know where they went.
We're getting lost in the minutiae here. Let me hit one more player.
Semantics.
Let me hit two players quick, then we can move on. Rather quietly, Robbie Anderson came into week 8 leading the Jets in targets and receiving yards, and he had a nice 100-yard and a touchdown game against the Falcons on my bench in the Fantasy Live League.
Oh.
Whoops. And he's had 59
yards.
By
the way, can we talk about how many buzzsaws you're going to run into in that league? I mean, you ran into my team this week that got a 30 spot from Jack Doyle and a 30-some-odd spot from Juju Smith-Schuster
and
Isaiah Crowell.
Oh,
Isaiah Crowell has done nothing all year, and then when he plays my team in the Fantasy Live League, he goes off.
How many buzzsaws are you going to run into? First, my team ran into this week.
Okay.
Yeah. I see what you did there, Carl.
I know. That's right. Yeah.
My team's a buzzsaw.
Well, no, like,
it's really
I see what you did there.
My team is trash because I'm depending on 30 spots from Juju Smith-Schuster and Jack Doyle.
Well, he called the shot. We'll talk about it.
Franchise, we were doing our segment, and James is like, yeah, you should mash me. Look at how good your team is.
Right.
Devonta Freeman, Doug Baldwin,
and
Jimmy Graham.
Studs.
And he's like, I'm starting Juju over here.
Crowell.
Isaiah Crowell.
Like, I mean, it's sad.
It's insane. But anyway, so Robbie Anderson has had 59-plus yards and or a touchdown in 5 of his last 6 games.
All right, very
good. Kind of a sneaky starter. I mean, it's a tough matchup this week because they got the Bills. But the Bills have allowed 3 consecutive 300-yard passers, so Robbie Anderson could be in the mix. And then a couple streaming options this week, tight end and quarterback.
Okay.
Let's go to Harmon's Los Angeles Rams.
Ooh.
My Rams.
Okay.
Yes.
So we've talked about this. The Giants were a defense we feared coming in, but they've now let three of the last 4 quarterbacks to face them have gone for 250-plus yards and 3 touchdowns. 3 of 4 quarterbacks, the last 4 quarterbacks to face the Giants have tossed 3 scores.
Wow.
And as for the Giants and Tyler Higbee, he's leading the Rams in playing time at tight end with 75% and targets. He's at 27. And week 8 was the first week this season where the Giants didn't allow a touchdown to a tight end because they were on their bye. Literally every other week this
season.
I
see what you did there.
They have allowed a touchdown or multiple touchdowns.
I was just about to say at least one.
I heard a tight end broke into their facility
and scored a touchdown.
Stole a ball and ran onto the end zone of the practice field.
But yeah, the whole thing, NFL.com/waiverwire.
Can I add one more?
Yeah,
and
sure.
I think this is more of a deep, kind of a sneakier play. How about Greg Olsen? he's getting closer and closer to coming back. And if you have the space.
Do we know his timetable yet?
I don't know. I guess the anticipation was that he would start practicing relatively soon here. And I say relatively. I mean, it could be 2 weeks. So I don't know. But
I wonder how much he was even really dropped.
Well, I was going to say his.
Probably a lot.
Oh, a lot. But his pup, because when's he off the pup? He's off the pup next week.
No idea.
He's at least eligible to come off the pup next week. So I'm just saying, at least check on his status, see what's going on there.
Could be a nice stash if you're on a play, going on a playoff run or
something.
Let's
say you're 6-1 right now.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And you just and you need a little tight end. Well, first of all, everybody needs tight end play, but
Dude.
He's not eligible to return to game action until week 12.
Yeah, they have a week 11 bye.
Oh, okay.
He's only 55.7% owned, and you know, for that meaningless.
Real quick though, I guess while we're on the topic of injury guys to pick up, Corey Davis this week could finally be returning for the first time since week 2 from his hamstring injury.
And the offense desperately needs
They definitely need it. And what's crazy is you went back and looked at week 1 game, he saw 10 targets. It was like 25% of Mariota's targets.
69
which,
receiving yards.
Yeah, with nice. Very nice.
Very nice.
Certainly somebody needs to usurp he who must not be named in that passing attack.
Eric Decker.
We don't need to talk about that. We need to talk about that.
We named him.
We don't need to talk about that, man.
I named him. All right, great. Let's talk about your top performers for week 8 at the quarterback position. Russell Wilson, 452 passing, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception, 30 yards rushing as well. We talked about Deshaun Watson, amazing performance. Andy Dalton sneaking into the top 5. 243 through the air versus the Colts, threw in 2 touchdowns as well. It was kind of a weird week for quarterbacks because if you had Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson, cool. Mm-hmm. If not, there were 8 quarterbacks within 3 points of each other, anywhere between 15.75 points and 18.75 points. So there was a lot of very close quarterback scoring throughout the league this week. At the wide receiver position, Nuke Hopkins. I mean, what can you say, man?
Career day.
My word.
10 targets, 8 receptions, 224. 224 yards receiving and a touchdown as well. I mean, that 70-yard one that he just absolutely ripped up the Seattle Seahawks and took it to the house.
Yeah.
By the way,
wow.
I love that they're finally using him on like wide receiver screens because he was good at those at Clemson, but then he came to the offense and like, nah, we'll throw that out of the playbook. But now that they got their younger quarterback, they're like, oh, let's get this little Clemson connection going again. We'll do the same wide receiver screens, and he's doing really well on them.
I really like the versatility of the routes that they got him running, too. I mean, shallow crosses, deep crosses.
You could see, like, the satisfaction on his face, too. Like, he's finally, like, after struggling through last year, like, he's like, yes,
also, dude,
I have a quarterback.
He's played with, like, 18 quarterbacks
over the last
3 years. So for him to have this situation now,
oh my God.
His face after that long catch and run was great, though, because he just took his helmet off and was just like,
mm-hmm, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
just
right.
Just in his glory.
I'm a total badass.
Yeah,
that's right.
Exactly.
What's up?
And it was just like, it was satisfaction that he was able to produce and that he had somebody that could help him produce. It was just like,
I know.
Just so much was in his face there.
Yeah.
It was so
great. My God, it was so awesome. Will Fuller, 8 targets, 5 receptions, 125 and 2 touchdowns. Robbie Anderson, as you mentioned, 6 for 6, 104 and a touchdown. Adam Thielen.
Finally in the end zone.
Not efficient, 5 of 10, but 98 yards and a touchdown for him. Can we talk about Paul Richardson?
Yeah,
though?
I was going to say, let's talk about Paul Richardson.
I mean,
Pritch.
One of Pritch. Yes.
Sounds almost Pritch. Like it should be bleeped.
Wow.
P. Rich. We'll just go with P. Rich.
Yeah, I think that's
No, I think we're going to go with Pritch.
Pritch. Pritchard?
Yeah, Pritch is,
Pritchardson?
Is the preferred nomenclature here. 105. 105 receiving. 2 touchdowns for Pritch. But, Matt Harmon, I mean, it's kind of weird. He's kind of developed into this, like, I don't want to say go-to receiver, but certainly one that's relied on in this passing attack.
Well, I tweeted yesterday that, like, I feel like every one of Paul Richardson's catches are like an 8.5 out of 10 on the degree of difficulty scale.
he makes
some insane catches.
Yeah, always spectacular, contested catches, leaping in the air, guys draped all over.
Dating back to last year, too.
Yeah,
late season playoff run. Remember he had the one touchdown catch against the Lions?
And if you talk to people like, you know, like Matt Waldman that really liked him coming out of college, that was what they really liked about him, was that even despite the fact he's like a kind of a thin receiver.
Very thin.
He's very tough.
So slight.
In contested situations, he's obviously – and which is great to see because he's a guy who's ripped up his ACL a number of times and probably doesn't have that same speed he did back in Colorado as a college prospect. But he looks really good. Tyler Lockett looks good, too. This whole passing offense is kind of coming together. And the Seahawks' upcoming schedule, they get Washington and Seattle, then they go to Arizona, then they play Atlanta at home, then they get the 49ers, the Eagles, before running into the Jaguars. Like, all of those games, yeah. I will be considering starting these, you know, number these kind of secondary, and I mean, maybe they're not even secondary receivers there anymore in Lockett and Richardson in this Seattle offense that's absolutely cooking right now.
And I mean, when Russell Wilson's thrown for 452 yards and four touchdowns, and right. the running backs combined for five rushing yards in a game,
yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
The wide receiver's gonna
Lockett had 6 for 121 as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was ripping through them, and Lockett too. Like I noted this in targets and touches, like he's running more routes from the slot this year at about. Just over 50%. He's
okay.
splitting time, and especially because they're spreading the field so much. Just like Franchise said, they cannot run the ball
yeah.
at all.
What was the crazy stat from yesterday? What was their rushing total?
Oh,
the running backs combined for 5 rushing yards on 12 carries.
Amazing.
Yeah, I was saying.
Russell Wilson had 30.
There are some teams in the NFL right now, them, the Bengals, like that just can't run the ball at all. And like honestly, she just shouldn't even bother trying. Like just go up-tempo, throw it to your running backs.
Yeah.
Like, The only guy the Seahawks have that could do that is really C.J. Proceis.
Proceis been
really
injured.
Exist. And J.D. McKissic. And, I mean, obviously the Bengals have Joe Mixon. But that just don't even bother on the ball.
Yeah, real quick, just if you missed bother. It, McKissic 4 for 6. Lacy 6 for 0 was the second best running back on the team because Thomas Rawls went 6 for -1.
It's like
Thomas Rawls has been a nightmare.
But
the last
they have no chance,
what?
Though. As soon as they're getting the ball, defenders are on them.
Oh, yeah.
There's no
oh, – yeah.
they have no chance
oh,
to
yeah.
even look
oh,
or
yeah.
make a cut
there
or
were
anything.
A few times where I thought Texans defenders had a better chance of taking the handoff than
Seahawks. Yeah,
yeah,
did.
Gross.
It's terrible.
Let me also talk about Alshon Jeffrey. So 62 yards and a touchdown. And I think a lot of folks might say, okay, I wonder if Alshon is back. Mm. I wonder if Alshon, if this is the Alshon that we're going to get. 62 yards and a touchdown for Alshon Jeffrey. But then when you kind of take a little bit of a deeper look and when you watch that game, it didn't really feel like he was back, did
Two
it?
Catches.
Two catches.
The great touchdown where he mossed the guy.
Oh, my God.
And rumbled into the end zone.
That was beautiful. But two receptions on 8 targets.
Yeah.
Not great efficiency. So I guess I'd like to know what you guys thought about Alshon's performance.
To answer your question, yes, I think this is the Alshon you're going to get all year because he's going to be an up-and-down producer that needs to produce – a big player to return fantasy value because he's getting, you know, pretty decent raw target numbers, but definitely not at the level of like
he's,
a funnel receiver.
Yeah, he's just real quick to put some numbers to those. He's second on the team with 62. He's got a 23.5% market share, but
that's pretty good.
He only has caught 28 of his 62 targets, 45% catch rate.
Oh, yeah, because
that's horrific.
Because he's getting a bunch of deep targets, low percentage targets, like. He's getting those deep down the sideline looks where Zach Ertz is obviously running up and down the middle. Nelson Aguilar's running out of the slot. Like, those are the guys that get the high percentage looks. Alshon deep down the field. Like, he's kind of like a vintage Martavis Bryant without the same ceiling sort
okay.
of player because he's just going to be super volatile. So, absolutely he has the potential to go 2 for 62 and a touch or even 4 for 71 as he did against the Panthers on Thursday night. But he can easily drop a 3 for 31 as he has a 2 for 37 in your lineup too. This is the guy that you're dealing with the rest of the year.
All right. At the running back position, top performers here. Shady McCoy, 27 carries, 151 yards on the ground, a touchdown, 22 receiving yards as well. So 173 total. For Shady McCoy and the touchdown. Yeah, dude, he looked good.
He is elite.
Jerick McKinnon, 14 carries for 50, had a touchdown as well as 6 receptions for 72 yards as well as a random 2-point conversion. It all adds up to like 25 or 26 PPR points, but he was very, very good for you in PPR. Melvin Gordon, 14 carries, 132 on the ground. That touchdown run, holy hell.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. Just get after it, Melvin Gordon. How about Zeke Elliott? 33 carries for him, 149 on the ground, 2 touchdowns for Zeke Elliott. He is legit. I mean, the Washington defense is actually pretty good.
They're good run defense. You know what's interesting is Zeke. Like, you remember at the beginning of the season there were some like chubby Zeke photos surfacing, like because he always has his shirt rolled up and like it was a little heavier. And I read about it or heard it on a podcast where like. Zeke had even admitted he came into his rookie season a little out of shape, and I think he came into this one a little out of shape. But now with 7-8 weeks of
conditioning,
game action and conditioning, yeah, he's cut back down and into like dominant Zeke mode. But we'll find out this week how many more games he's going to be
playing. Yeah, if this was the last we see of Zeke Elliott for six games, he left two pretty good performances on the field. It is worth noting Washington.
When's that ruling coming down?
I don't know.
Today, I think, is when the court's supposed to say.
Oh, boy.
News.
I have no idea.
All right.
He's averaged 137 rush yards over the last three games with five touchdowns in that span.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's
five total touchdowns.
Is that elite?
Yes.
It is elite.
Some would say.
Insane. He's just insane.
Is he a cyborg?
I wouldn't go that far.
Let's get to tight ends, please.
Jimmy Graham, four receptions, 39 yards, two touchdowns.
Cool.
The second one was just so unnecessary.
He's like, go ahead and trade me, guys.
Man.
Go ahead.
Jack Doyle, how about this line? 14 targets.
Yeah, how about it?
Ridiculous.
Against me.
Doyle, 12 receptions, 121 yards, and a touchdown for Jack Doyle, a 30 spot. For those of you in PPR league.
I know nobody cares about our fantasy teams, but James got 62.4 points against me from Juju and Jack Doyle.
Obviously.
Do you feel attacked?
I feel attacked. This is why I'm 1-6 in that league, because dumb stuff like this keeps happening.
About to be 1-7. All right.
Oh.
Rob Gronkowski, 5-9, 57 yards and a touchdown.
Gronk.
Austin Hooper, 4-6. 47 yards and a touchdown as well. And Zach Ertz continues to pour it on with those touchdowns, man.
Ertz.
34 yards and a touchdown for Zachariah Ertz. All right, let's talk about your biggest disappointments at the quarterback position.
Sad.
We will go to Matt Harmon here. Cam Newton versus Tampa Bay. 18 of 32 passing, which is poor. And then 154 yards passing, which is poor. Mm-hmm. 44 rush yards, a touchdown as well, and had an interception. But the 44 rush yards helped, you know, float his value a bit. But Cam Newton did not look good. And It's been the second week in a row that Cam has really, I guess maybe even the third week. Is it third week?
Second week in a row. Kind of not great.
The 3 weeks ago, he had a bad box score, but still good fantasy performance.
That's
Okay. So there you go. What was your takeaways there, Matt Harmon?
Oh, God. Well, here's the thing.
Again.
I was tweeting with a few Panthers fans this morning talking about this because I was mentioning on Twitter that what I was saying earlier about the, like, if you can't run the ball, just throw to your running backs. Like, don't even bother trying. They were saying, well, is Carolina one of those teams? I said, the problem is I think you need a good quarterback to do that. And right now the Panthers do not have a good quarterback. Cam Newton has been legit dreadful the last three games. Not to mention, like, everything that's going on around him in the passing game is bad. Like, if they tried to do that situation, I mean, we saw when he had to throw 50-plus passes against the Eagles on that Thursday night game, they just sent waves and waves and waves of pressure because they have a bad pass protection offensive line in addition to a bad run-blocking offensive line. Yeah. I mean, this is just –
they're banged up, man.
It's a broken offense right now. I don't know what the answer is for them. And, like, unless Cam goes, you know, totally, you know, neon and lights it up again like he did in that two-game stretch against the Patriots and the Lions, then – I think this is just a real broken offense. I mean, Devin Funchess is still seeing really good volume, but not doing anything with it.
Yeah.
He's kind of back to not being a very good player. Kelvin Benjamin is playing all right through this dreadful stretch of offense. But other than that, like, none of their offensive players are playing well, and it starts with the quarterback who's been just honestly – obnoxiously bad.
You know, I saw a really good piece about the Carolina offense on the four letter, but they did a good job breaking down, you know, does this offense lack an identity? You know, because in years previous, we're talking about a unit that was, all right, man, we are just going to mash up front and go power and run with authority. Now they're trying to mix in Christian McCaffrey, and yeah, they got this great weapon, but they're not exactly sure how to use them because they're trying to go a little bit more spread. So they've kind of lost that identity of going from like a power run team to being some weird, you know, a conglomeration of a power run team mixed in with like, you know, spread concepts as well. And it just seems like they're a little bit lost.
I don't know. Because I think McCaffrey showed well as like a being able to run in a power scheme at Stanford.
Right.
I just think they can't run block. I don't know that it's so much of an identity issue. I just think they can't run block, and because they then can't run the ball, their quarterback is just not a good enough player right now to elevate that offense. I don't know that it's some grand crisis of identity. I think they just are they're just not executing. They're just not doing the job. I don't think it's anything with like a lack of creativity or anything like that. And Cam, like, taking like 50-yard deep shots on, you know, third and less than 10. Give me a break, man. Like, what are you doing? You're not going to move, like, you're not going to move the ball that way. You're not like, what, just again, those my thought watching Cam Newton yesterday against the Bucs was just, what the hell are you doing on a number of times?
And again,
I feel like I've said that about Cam Newton all year. So.
And again, it's Tampa Bay, which is a defense that had just been picked on in recent weeks. So there you go.
Not a good defense.
Drew Brees, a disappointment as well. The next two guys, it's funny. Disappointments in fantasy, but good real life games. I thought Drew Brees versus Chicago was very good. 23 of 28. Mm-hmm. You talk about efficiency, 299 passing yards, but no touchdowns, which is why he ends up on this disappointment
that,
fantasy.
With that offense changing, as we talked about, like, it's no longer the Drew Brees at home, like,
right,
set it and forget it, because they're
right
running that offense through the ground game.
Dak Prescott, also a bad fantasy day, but again, I thought he actually ran a very, very good, solid real life game, but only chipped in with 143
also,
passing yards.
Worth noting that game was in a torrential downpour,
that's
and
true.
They were just kind of like, Zeke, you're heating up. Just
that's it.
Go win.
30,
go
win 33
us,
carries.
Go win us the game. Yeah, 33 carries. I think it was a career high for him, they said on the broadcast.
Devontae Freeman, 12 carries, 41 yards, 20 receiving yards as well. A relative disappointment there for Devontae.
Get Sark out of here, man.
I know, dude. I don't know.
Tevin Coleman ripped off a long run, and now it looks like in the box score he had the better day, but Freeman was running really well early.
I agree.
There was a report from Vaughn McClure of ESPN that Freeman suffered a minor shoulder injury during the game and was getting checked out on the sideline, so that might be why we saw Tevin Coleman have the volume later in the game.
But get Sark.
But Freeman's been averaging 6.6 yards per carry in the two previous games, and they're just 140 yards on 21 attempts, and Coleman's had 3.2 yards per carry, and Freeman workload just continues to diminish, and it's like so mysterious.
I don't get it.
I don't know what's going on.
I don't get it. Jay Ajayi, 13 carries, 23 rush yards.
Ugh.
It's going to happen when you get blown out 40-0.
Yeah.
Carries. That's not good. He had 41 total yards, zero touchdowns. He has zero touchdowns on the season.
Yeah.
Jay Ajayi, zero touchdowns on the season. Wow. Let's talk about wide receiver disappointments. And I put it in literally everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, what a weird week.
Yeah.
What a weird week.
There were a lot of games that were pummeled in rain, so I think some teams by design took the air out of the ball and wind and such like that. But
true.
Yeah, it was also just a weird week. These happen.
Mike Evans, Julio Jones, Dez Bryant, Michael Thomas, Keenan Allen in a prime spot against New England. All of them scored in single digits for your fantasy team.
Well,
Keenan Allen's the real interesting one, because he hasn't crossed, I think, 70 yards receiving since a big blow-up game against the Eagles, I believe, in week 4. I wrote about this in Targets and Touches. Can't remember it off the top of my head right now. But he also – his targets have gone down each game since that week 4 blow-up.
Interesting. I feel like we've seen more Travis Benjamin in that offense.
Yeah, he was like
this
the guy.
This week, strangely.
Yeah, he was like the guy on that – despite his big mistake on the punt return, he was like the guy on that drive to try to win the game there late at the end. I mean, Rivers kept looking for him. And to Benjamin's credit, he responded. He played pretty well outside of that punt return.
Yeah.
And you know, we're seeing more Mike Williams on the field. That might be a potential reason why he's seeing a slight downtick in targets. So I don't know what to do with Keenan Allen right now.
Another disappointment. The Mossy special this week was, following his 210 two-touchdown performance, Amari Cooper would have less than 50 yards receiving and no touchdowns. That was the Mossy special. Amari Cooper, 5 receptions, 48 yards receiving.
Yeah.
No touchdown.
The Mossy special was Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson would have the only rushing touchdowns for their teams.
Oh, what was that?
That was just factor fiction.
Oh, just a random factor fiction?
Right.
Okay, there you go. All right, Stephon Diggs, 4 of 6, 27 yards for Stephon Diggs. So, oh boy.
Everyone in Minnesota scored except Stephon Diggs.
Right.
Kyle Rudolph, Adam Thielen, and Jared McKinnon.
There you go.
Great.
At tight end position, Jordan Reed got hurt.
Yep.
One catch, 5 yards.
Shock.
Hamstring injury. Yes, I know. Hunter Henry, again, in a pretty good spot. Just 2 receptions on 2 targets total, had 11 yards. So that was a disappointment for Hunter Henry. All right, let's get to every damn game here. We'll start in London. Minnesota taking on Cleveland. Alex Gilhar, what did you see?
Browns, nah. Didn't get to watch this game closely because we were doing Fantasy Live.
Oh,
but
that's right.
Latavius Murray still saw a bunch of work, but
yeah.
The Browns' run defense is still very, very good. They did shut down McKinnon, like, kind of on the ground as well. He made his hay through the passing game, but
right.
Murray's not going away. You know, if you picked him up, don't drop him. They'll have better, more favorable game scripts coming up. And then we know what the passing game is.
Isaiah Crowell, bro.
What a
great first touchdown of the year.
I know. How funny was that, too, by the way? No Joe Thomas. Hmm. Taking on a Minnesota defense that is just – It's a lockdown defense, right?
Doesn't make any sense at all.
No sense. And then Isaiah Crowell rips off a 30-yard run.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Still, Browns, nah.
Yeah.
Indianapolis at Cincinnati. Matt Harmon, what did you see?
Well, this is the week for Joe Mixon, except it really kind of wasn't. He had 11 carries for 18 whole rushing yards.
Woo. Terrible.
Mike Clay did tweet out that on the season, Joe Mixon has 17 catches off 17 targets, and one of my buddies, Hank Jones, a Jags fan on Twitter, quote tweeted, said, yeah, almost as many rushing yards as he had against the Indianapolis Colts defense on Sunday. He did catch a long 67-yard screen pass that he created a lot on his own and ran 3 for 91 through the air on 3 targets. But it's just not happening here. Like, it's just the run game is not good. They absolutely should throw him the ball as much as possible, but it's just not happening here. So just keep it moving.
Carolina taking on the Bucs. Matt Franchise, we talked about this game a little bit, but what else did you see?
Yeah, we kind of hammered home the Panthers. Of course, the week we all give up on Jonathan Stewart, he falls into the end zone for the first time.
Don't care.
Don't chase it. The run game there is not good. On the Bucs side, Evans, you mentioned, was a disappointment. Yeah. Cameron Brate remains a weekly starter at tight end. It was not a huge game for him. He still had 5 targets. And then Doug Martin had 71 yards on 18 carries in a tough matchup, which was somewhat expected, but the schedule opens up for him coming up. And then Jameis Winston, like, he just frustrates me so much. He makes stupid throws when he's getting tackled, and he like feels like he has to get rid of the ball.
Yeah.
And it's just so hard to watch. I don't know. And he's just
so random.
He's not playing well, and this entire offense is suffering because of it. So
I mean, that's just the most random thing, by the way, because he always does.
At least once a game, there's some kind of boneheaded throw where
he just throws, lofts it into the air. What are you doing,
yeah,
James?
Just take the sack and punt.
Yeah, in a year where we're seeing Carson Wentz take a big step forward, we're seeing Deshaun Watson establish himself.
Yeah,
Dak Prescott, I think, maintain his elite play from last year.
Yeah.
Jameis Winston is not getting even an ounce better,
and he's got all these weapons,
and they're all suffering because of it. Mike Evans hasn't had a 100-yard game this year, despite the fact that he's never seen less than 8 targets in any game this year. But there's just the ceiling's not there because their quarterback stinks.
Right,
Mike Evans had a 0 spot at halftime, right? He had 0 yards.
He ended up with 60.
Panthers have a good defense. That's worth noting.
True.
Amazing. Oakland taking on the Bills. Alex Gelhar, what'd you see?
Shady McCoy got it done. This Oakland offense, as Harmon mentioned, is overrated. This was predictable as well, with them coming off that huge emotional win, then having to go all the way across the country for an early game against a good defense.
Yeah.
I mean, Carr put up volume in, because I mean, they were down by like 2 scores for pretty much this entire game.
They were.
The Bills kept them at bay with their strong running game. There aren't really any pass catchers still to target from the Bills things. Tyrod can be started at home, but we know what the Oakland offense is. We can kind of trust Crabtree and Cooper now at this point, but like other than that,
Cooper? I mean, he's had one good game.
He got volume again this game in like a tough spot, which was what was encouraging.
Yeah, that's true.
So like he came back. He obviously came down from his 19 targets, but what did he have, like 8 or 10 targets in this game?
10.
10.
Ten targets.
I mean, he predictably again fell flat against a very good defense.
San Francisco at Philadelphia. Some news notes here. Safety Jimmy Ward, broken arm. Left tackle Joe Staley, broken orbital bone. Which is the bone around your eye.
Ooh, ouch.
Pierre Garçon, injured neck. I mean, that's all on San Francisco side. That's not great.
It's their top tackle and their top wide receiver, too.
That's bad.
That's
not great. Matt Harmon, what else you see?
Yeah, for an offense in San Francisco, that's just a nightmare. I mean, C.J. Beathard's not been good. There's really nothing to talk about with the 49ers, especially if Garçon is out. On the Eagles side, the one note I would want to say is, like, I know Nelson Agholor was a disappointment, 3 catches for 26 yards, but he got those 3 targets right away in the first quarter. Two really early, then one late in the first quarter.
Okay.
They just never really had to go back to him because they were just
And that's just in his range of outcomes. I mean, given the way the offense operates.
Yeah, and Andy's, like I said, there are no funnel receivers on this team. He's not getting a ton of volume. So these, you're right. You're absolutely good to point that out. Like, these are in his range of outcomes, especially in a game where the opposing team did not score until the third quarter.
I think LeGarrette Blount continues to get it done as well.
Yep.
Behind a very solid offensive line.
Yeah, that is, it's a good point. I mean, 16 carries, not super efficient, only 48 yards, 3 yards per carry, but he did grab that touchdown. I mean, this was of all the games to play LeGarrette Blount, like, against 100%. A bad run defense, against a bad overall team where they should control it at home. In some sloppy weather.
This is the first full game without Jason Peters, though. It's worth noting.
Truth.
So that is true.
And like, that's a big domino to lose from their offensive line.
And I think it made a difference, because watching the game, there were definitely some times where Carson Wentz was hurried a little more. This wasn't like he did not go God mode in this game as he has in his previous two.
Very good point. All right, Dallas taking on Washington in Washington. Matt Franchise, what did you see in this rainy game?
Yeah, we talked about Zeke and Dak. Dez, I think, had 4 catches on six targets for 39 yards.
It was a narrative on the broadcast that he was chirping for more work and didn't get a ton of it.
Yeah. And Josh Norman wasn't covering him the whole game either.
Yeah.
So on the Washington side of the ball, Chris Thompson was a PPR beast again. Eight catches, 76 yards. He had 4 carries for 18 yards. The Washington offensive line has a ton of major injuries. So
they were missing 3 starters in this game, and I think somebody else got injured too at one point.
Yeah, I think you're correct. So Chris Thompson and Rob Kelly, I think, combined for something like 30 – just over 30 rushing yards. On
12 for 37, I'm looking at
12.
The
yeah.
Rob Kelly found the end zone early, but he still only had like 7 or 8 fantasy points. And then Josh Doctson played 79% of the snaps again, only had 1 catch, which was a touchdown. And Terrell Pryor played 33% of the snaps, so I think this is a thing now because we've seen it 2 weeks in a row. And it was a Jameson Crowder game, 12 catches.
Where did this come from?
9 catches.
Sorry.
12 targets.
12 targets.
Yeah, 12 targets. 9 catches.
9 catches, over 100 yards.
129 yards. He had 149 yards coming into this game.
What?
I mean, it's just like every week is a different guy in this offense who goes off, and you can't predict it. And now Jordan Reed's out with an injury, so
Vernon Davis
next. I think Niles Paul also got hurt in this game.
He did, concussion.
Oh boy.
It's just totally unpredictable.
The Falcons on the road taking on the Jets. Alex Gilhar, what did you see?
Get Sark out of here. That's all I have to say. Mohamed Sanu is a sneaky like weekly flex play, though.
I like him.
He's had 6-plus targets in all of his healthy games. The one he did not was when he suffered his hamstring injury and left the game. And he's had a couple touchdowns, and he's at a reasonable yardage floor. Julio Jones is like 70 yards a game-ish. Like, what are we doing here? Austin Hooper, it was good to see him get into the mix, because previously when Sanu was healthy, Hooper was an afterthought. His big blow-up games had been when that freak play in week one with the 88-yard touchdown, but then otherwise when Sanu was out. And then on the Jets, like, I mean, Forte had a decent game as a pass catcher, but their running backs didn't do a whole hell of a lot, and we already talked about Robbie Anderson.
Had a baby.
Safarian Jenkins kind of disappointed a little bit, but he's still a weekly starter because tight end is a wasteland.
So bad.
Sunday Night Football, it is the Pittsburgh Steelers on the road taking on the Detroit Lions. Not sure how many people in L.A. saw this game, but that's okay. Matt Harmon, what did you see?
Well, I did watch it because I'm a professional.
Atta baby.
And not to mention the World Series still went on like 5 more hours after that, so I think I still got the gist.
I know, exactly.
But anyways, the Lions' red zone offense is just the most depressing asset I think I've ever seen. Because, and that might be an exaggeration, but look, they don't want to run Amir Abdullah around the goal line. I get it. And Amir Abdullah, like, once again in this game several times, did some things where the announcer's like, what a fantastic run, and then he has 11 carries for 27 yards.
I mean, right.
Get him out of fantasy forever. Anyways, Dwayne Washington can't break tackles at the goal line.
I mean, can I just say what in the hell is Detroit doing around the goal line?
That's what I'm saying. Watching,
what are you guys doing?
I had no faith as they're driving to
stop
win.
Stop running the ball.
Yeah, well, but at the same time,
who
like
gonna,
in the,
like what's their best option to throw to? Like
I don't know.
Marv Jones isn't an elite guy. He can't moss everybody. Golden Tate, like what out of the slot?
Darren Fells.
Well,
God, geez, stop throwing Darren Fells the ball.
I mean
just Eric, what are you guys doing?
Eric Ebron is not that guy. He had a nice long 44-yard catch and run, which is like the only thing he's ever been good at.
Yes. You know, might be that guy. They need Galladay.
I mean,
I guess, man.
But I'm saying there's got to be.
He's got the athleticism.
100%. But I'm saying conceptually, there's got to be something you can do. You got to keep the ball in Matt Stafford's hands. Like, stop running the ball. You can't run.
Maybe if you had a good back. you could do it, but you don't. You don't have that guy. So
what happened to Theo Riddick, like running like the angle routes and out of the slot and
exactly.
stuff like that?
I think teams have started. Yeah, well, you're right. But
well, still,
think,
he's a mismatch. You put him on a linebacker out there.
But yeah. So anyways, I don't want to spend too much time harping on that. But it's just like it's just that offense just can't really score touchdowns at this point. And on the Steelers side, might be a hot take, but I would consider trying to sell Juju off the hype from this game. Primetime contest, he gets 10 targets. He had the 197-yard catch and run for a touchdown, which was really impressive.
But, I mean, even you take that off the board, he's still almost
100
yards.
And I'm not about, like, well, if you take the guy's best play away, because, I mean, that makes everybody. Like, you take my best-looking day away, I look like hell the rest of
the
day.
By the way.
Of course. No, everybody knows that. But, like, coming into this game, 6 targets, 3 targets, 3 targets in the games previous, and I think that's the way it's going to go.
Right.
I don't think that, like, Martavis Bryant being inactive is that big of a deal because he just wasn't involved anyways. This is a team that's running the ball, like I mentioned, bottom 5 in run play percentage in the last 3 weeks. I think that's the identity of the Steelers offense. I just don't know if they're going to support 2 receivers. And if his value – I don't know. Selling – I always hate trade advice because it's so dumb. But, like, I would just explore, like, maybe trying to push him out for somebody more established that's going to get volume.
I don't have – I'm, like, 95% positive this is the case. But I think this would be the first time a non-Antonio Brown player on the Steelers this year has seen double-digit targets. And that's through 8 games.
I think you're right about that.
Because, like, I just pulled up Martavis, and his highest target total was 8. Mm-hmm. And, like, who else?
Bell might have.
Well, I
just
mean, like,
Bell, a wide receiver.
Outside of Bell. I was saying, like, non-Lev Bell player saw double-digit targets.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like, same with Martavis. 6, 4, 8, 5, 8, 3,
if the
2.
Steelers – okay, but how about if the Steelers ship off Martavis Bryant? Mm-hmm. And it's almost like – I almost feel like they should just in terms of a Mark Ingram type, you know, addition by subtraction. You know what I mean? So you take him out of the mix, and then all of a sudden everyone else is playing a lot better because there's less pressure to get that guy the ball. Ben Roethlisberger continues to be just horrific downfield. I mean, just horrific downfield. And I wonder if, you know, taking those targets away, they're stalling drives, you know, whatever it is, the 3, 4, 5 handful of targets that they're throwing to Martavis that are doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
I wonder if you just turn those into Juju Smith-Schuster targets.
I'll be real curious to see if they do ship off Martavis. I was on the couch yesterday with Ike Taylor, and he made the point too. He's like, I don't think they can because that sets a precedent that you can just
wind your way
out of the organization, and that is not how Pittsburgh has ever operated. They've been one of the most consistent organizations/front offices, and they don't want to set that precedent.
I think it's a little bit different because it's different getting shipped out versus getting a contract extension. I think what Ike is talking about is trying to get a contract extension. Martavis is like, no, just get me out. It's different. I mean, it's money being spent versus money being saved.
I also think they have Mike Tomlin even said, like, we've invested too much in this guy. Clearly, we need to invest more time with him. But
they've spent years, resources putting him through, you know, therapy and rehab and stuff like that.
And I'm all about it. That's cool.
And if they get him dialed in,
all right,
he's a game changing asset. I mean, we know that it's been a long time since we've seen it, but he is a game changing asset. I think he is more valuable to, because again, you ship him out, what the hell are you getting back? You getting like a 4th round pick from the Bills or something?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Less probably.
Probably less. What are you going to give up for a player that is, you know, one sneeze away from a forever life ban suspension?
Yeah.
Someone who hasn't put good tape on the field over a calendar year
long
now.
Time.
So what are you doing? I think he's more valuable to the Steelers in their organization than just shipping him.
And which, when he comes back from his one game inactive, like, don't be an idiot on Instagram thing, like, he's still going to get a few targets. It's going to be hard for Juju to access this ceiling.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. All right, let's close out your show with a round of daily daps.
Daps.
Daps, 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 daps.
Daps. Daps.
Sick.
All
right. Sick drop.
Daily daps.
Alex Gailhart gets kicked off.
All right, good. I've got a couple things to dap quick first. Destiny 2, picked it up. Very, very, very fun. Gorgeous game. Great soundtrack. Having a lot of fun playing it. Check it out. Stranger Things Season 2, I'm 5 episodes. It's awesome.
Great.
And now my office has prepared an official statement in regards to the Hocus Pocus.
Should we recap the Hocus Pocus?
Yeah, let's recap it.
Let's recap it.
What? So last week's podcast.
Thursday's
podcast. Alex let loose that on
Sunday night.
Sunday night, he got home from watching a game, from watching football all day.
Yeah.
He said, I just,
Hocus,
you know, just
I was channel surfing. Hocus Pocus was on. I was like, oh, great. Cracked beer and just I just relaxed and watched Hocus Pocus.
Kicked your feet up and had a great night watching Hocus Pocus drinking beer.
And Franchise and responded with, get a life.
That was just a natural reflex response was get a life. And we all died laughing.
Get a life.
And gave him crap for cracking a beer and watching Hocus Pocus.
Now for my official statement. Last Thursday during the Daily Daps portion of the podcast, I referenced watching and enjoying the 1993 cult classic family film Hocus Pocus.
Oh my
starring
God.
Bette Midler, Sarah Jessica Parker, and a young Thora Birch. I was immediately assaulted for my takes, including the fact that I had and enjoyed a beer watching this objectively high-quality film. Shut up. Let me finish my statement. After several days of mostly abuse from the haters and losers on social media and by my own father via text, I feel the need to address this situation instead of focusing on the bigger picture and making fantasy great again.
Well, hold on. What did your dad text?
For starters, he said, I agree with them. Hocus Pocus sucks. Get a life.
Wow.
For starters, Hocus Pocus is objectively not a, quote, great film. No one is saying that it deserves Oscars. As I referenced, it is a cult classic, one people enjoy despite and oftentimes because of its mediocrity. One of the main characters is a talking cat named Thackeray Binks, for God's sake. Several of you have reveled in watching terrible movies with me in the past, and for you to turn the tables on this is quite honestly disgraceful.
Wow.
Next, the beer. I'm frankly baffled. How dare you, Loose Cannon? How dare you?
Agree.
Next, the beer. Frankly, I'm baffled that I would be attacked on this beer-loving podcast for drinking a delicious beverage after a 13-plus hour day of work.
The goalposts.
Where Franchise
exactly.
told me.
Moving the goalposts.
Let me finish. Get a life.
Get a life.
Get a
after
life.
After a long day of work is one of the best times to drink a beer. And in fact, drinking beer while watching a bad movie is an activity we have done together multiple times.
Prove it.
Furthermore, beer is a great accompaniment to pretty much any activity that does not involve operating machinery or driving any sort of vehicle.
Debatable.
You, man.
In summation, I feel I was unfairly treated in this regard, and the collective groupthink from this room and the listeners latched onto one fact, and that it was Hocus Pocus, and missed the bigger picture. With that, I conclude my statement.
There
also,
is no bigger
screw
picture.
The haters and losers. Gelhar out.
There's no.
Wow, he dropped the mic.
Okay, he's
so,
out.
So I think we can all agree.
He's leaving.
He's literally leaving the podcast studio because he said, "Screw."
He's out.
I think he literally is leaving the studio.
He doesn't want to hear our rebukes.
Unbelievable.
I think there's only one response to make to that little tirade, which is still get a life, bro. How long did you spend writing that?
That's what I was thinking.
Anyways,
probably at least half an hour.
Oh,
while Hocus Pocus was on. He probably DVR'd it.
Well, you got to have something else to do while you're watching that piece of junk.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
That was sad.
Matt Franchise, what do you got?
I daily dapped this last week, but I'm going to daily daps the World Series again because it's absolutely incredible. It's one great. For the books. Last night it was 13-12. Are you kidding me?
It felt over five different times.
I know.
I mean,
I cannot imagine being a fan in one of those stadiums. Yeah. And just draining your emotions when your team goes up by three runs.
Right.
And then the other team ties it. And then your team goes up again by a home run. And then the other team ties it again all in the span of like 4 hours. It's just insane.
You're shortchanging it. It was 5 hours.
5 hours.
Five and a half.
It's exhausting.
I love the fact after game one, which was like the quickest World Series
game
ever.
It's like 2.5 hours.
It was 2.5 hours. We're like, oh my God, this is great. Two and a half hour baseball game. And then it's like, no. Hold up. We got to make up some time.
It's awesome. Awesome.
We got to make up some commercial time here. We're going to get you a 5.5 hour game.
Now. I got to say, you know, the World Series is good when, like, I am well comfortable saying I do not enjoy baseball. Mm-hmm. I am really enjoying the World Series.
It's so
good. It's probably
good.
Just because it's the Dodgers.
It's the Dodgers, yeah. But
my,
I mean,
my Dodgers are doing really well.
Beyond the fact that we live in LA and it's the Dodgers, I mean, last year's World Series was good. I think this one is beating it.
Look at Drake Harmon over here just talking about my Dodgers. And
Get out of here.
Yeah, okay.
I'm embracing the city.
When the Panthers win, it's my Panthers. Oh. And when the
Royals it is not.
He's a front runner bandwagon type guy.
Drake Harmon over here.
Excuse me. I want to have a little fun while watching sports.
Okay, great. I'll daily dap Austin Eckler. we did a Danger Zone piece on Austin Eckler. Somehow it got in front of Austin Eckler. I didn't at tweet him. I don't generally don't at tweet these athletes, but somehow it got in front of Austin Eckler, and he replied with the beautiful mind, Russell Crowe, the number.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Spinning around.
The GIF. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
Austin Eckler was looking at the numbers.
He was looking at the numbers.
Yeah. Danger Zone Friday was, I think, the outrageous. Best all season. It was so good.
It was outrageous. I don't know. I don't know what the hell we're doing over there, but.
But you're doing it.
But we're doing it. Speaking of idiots doing idiot things, that is the Danger Zone in a nutshell. All right, Matt Armour, what do you got?
I'm going to keep this simple since we've really, really milked this segment today. Not to name any names in particular.
Alex Galhar.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Got a life.
Life, man. But I get Daily Daps yesterday.
Yeah.
The secret hidden breakfast buffet
The
second floor that was alerted to Franchise and I by the producers of the Twitter Blitz show that we're on every Sunday morning, 11:30 Eastern time. NFL.twitter.com.
It's because you guys are talent.
Whoa.
So you guys
Don't get mixed up here.
No. This was a
don't try to spin this.
This was a breakfast buffet that was hidden in the second floor kitchen here.
Way upstairs, all the way in the back.
Like where all the sales offices are and everything up there on
the second floor.
Is that a normal occurrence?
I don't
know. I think it was because of the London game.
Right.
Where we went. There was absolutely zero people on the second floor at 7 a.m.
Let me tell you, I will be finding out whether it is a regular occurrence or not.
Right.
I will be there
we will
every
check.
Sunday morning. But it's insane. I mean, it's like a full-scale, fully stocked breakfast bar, but there's nobody up here on the second floor because those people don't work on Sundays because they're real people.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So we helped ourselves.
We enjoyed it.
Producer Erica, what do you got?
Oh, geez. Tough act to follow.
Daily Daps.
Seriously. I'm going home to Boston this weekend, so I'm going to dap that. Just for the weekend.
There you go. Perfect.
Going to see some fam and friends and hang out. You know?
Much needed.
Crack a couple brews. Watch Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh,
definitely.
God, no.
Definitely. Watch Hocus Pocus. Yep, the Pats are on a bye. The one weekend I'm home. Oh, well, so
that's kind of inconvenient.
Yeah, I can't go to that one.
Okay. Well, you should have planned that a little bit.
You know what? I really should have.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, for producer Erica, for Matt Harmon, for Matt Franchise, for the ghosted Alex Galhar.
Get a life.
I'm James Coe. That's your show. We appreciate you listening to NFL Fantasy Live, the podcast. We will catch you on Thursday. See ya.
See you later.